Thank you all for coming this morning. I actually could have titled this this presentation, Is There Any Variation Among Hardwood Spring Wheat Varieties? It's been one of the things I've been wondering with a number of crops, looking at some of the data we have as we move forward, looking at updating our sulfur recommendations, is what are some of the areas we need to be looking at, particularly since we've had some questions from growers on variety-specific recommendations, whether or not there's any need for that moving forward with the current guidelines. So where are we at right now in Minnesota? Currently 28 kilograms of S per hectare suggested when wheat is grown only on sandy soils with low organic matter. And what I usually mean by low organic matter is less than 30 grams per kilogram soil organic matter in the top 15 centimeters. So this has been traditionally in the recommendations. As we've moved through some of the other crops, we've changed this slightly, particularly with corn production, where we've seen instances on non-sandy soils where the sulfur supply is lower, where we've had some benefits. So we've kind of moved towards some of that as well with spring wheat, but we haven't really had hard documented evidence that these responses have been occurring, particularly in hard red spring wheat production. Why are we doing this? More of the questions that we're getting from producers really revolve around some of these multi-nutrient blends like the Micro Essentials line. There's more of that being sold just because some of the co-ops have been trying to save on bin space, so they've been moving towards one of these blends instead of traditionally MAP, particularly in our northwest region where we have a lot of hard red spring wheat production. So a lot of the growers right now are wondering what kind of benefit they're actually getting from the sulfur side of that fertilizer, whether or not they need it, and really what's their overall return. So in 2008, when I first started in Minnesota, we did start some work looking at hard red spring wheat. This is actually unpublished data. The rates, I apologize, are in pounds of S per acre, but these equate to 14 and 28 kilograms of S per hectare. What we're looking at within this particular study was looking at timing of application and source. I don't have any of the source data in here. We looked at Micro Essentials S15, as well as ammonium sulfate put on pre-seeding, and there was absolutely no response from those. The only effect we actually saw where we went and did some split applications with a 0, 14, and 28 kilogram rates. At one of the sets of locations, we had more sandy sites, a slight increase in yield, although very marginal. Then on the medium and fine textured sites, a slight and very marginal change in protein. So really what I concluded on this is there really wasn't an overall impact for many of these sites where we had traditionally not seen much of an impact on sulfur. One of all the comments I received from many of our growers is that we use the variety Glen, which has been a traditionally high protein variety, and we did that mainly to give ourselves a better chance, we thought, of seeing some differences in protein by having something with a higher protein potential. And a lot of the growers really have the question of whether or not we use it a high yield variety if maybe our results would have been different. So, I mean, really everything was pretty inconclusive at this point. So in about 2012, we started doing some survey work looking at spring wheat varieties, and this was kind of at the height of when we started to see a lot of plant tissue testing going on. So this is published in Agronomy Journal. We were looking at variation among the varieties, looking at how they accumulate nutrients, and looking at specifically flagleaf tissue because this is what a lot of the growers were sampling at that particular point in time. One thing we did note on that is there's a lot of variation among all the nutrients, in particular sulfur. And we're looking at stability diagrams. So it's kind of looking at some things that some of the geneticists were looking at for G by E interactions. I adapted that looking at sulfur. So this is just an example of that where we're looking at how the flag leaves accumulated sulfur in relation to the averages within the locations. And what we're noticing, this is just looking at three varieties here, that you're seeing some that were average, some that seem to be above average, and some that were below average. So the question moving into this current study then was looking at the above and below average to give us an idea of whether or not this was indicating their accumulation potential for sulfur. We could say that maybe if they're accumulating more, were they less efficient at translocating it, or were they more efficient at taking it up in a high sulfur environment, then the opposite would be true then in the low sulfur environment. So trying to use this at least as a screening tool to maybe look at that G by E and some of that response among varieties of sulfur, if we could use this type of tool to predict that. So our primary research questions are really, do varieties differ in the response to sulfur? I mean, that was the main thing. Then can we use that plant tissue survey data to indicate some of that variation? And can I replicate that by applying sulfur within a single location? Because these locations, when we looked at the tissue survey, didn't have any fertilizer treatments on them. They just went with the base rates of whatever went down for the farmers within those given fields. So I wanted to see if we could actually replicate those uptake differences by applying sulfur within these fields. So the data I've summarized in three environments. Crookston, which is our traditional hard red spring wheat growing area in the northern part of the state. High pH soils, high organic matter. We're looking at organic matter around 50 grams per kilogram. Should have a very high potential for mineralizing sulfur within that site. Fergus Falls and Kimball, also an area where they grow spring wheat, a little lower in the organic matter, though. We're looking at 30 to 40 grams per kilogram. And then Staples, we don't have a lot of irrigated wheat, but there's some out there. And I use this site as just a traditional check because it's we're talking organic matter around 20 grams per kilogram or less, so it should be in that responsive range. One thing about the irrigation at this site, though, we did test the irrigation well water, and that's one of the things that we've seen a lot in many of our irrigated sites, is that we can get a substantial amount of sulfur out of that well water. So it's one of the things we have to watch out for when we're doing some of these studies, is that even if it's an irrigated sandy site, that we don't always see a response just because of we're getting anywhere from 10 to 20 kilograms per hectare per year through that well water. So it can be pretty substantial and really eliminate what we have for a response. So we established plots over three growing seasons. We're using ammonium sulfate. Our rates were 0, 8.4, and 16.8. I learned one thing from that first study is to not use as high of rates. I think that's one of the reasons why we failed in that study in 2008. Six varieties. This is showing what the variety sets were, low, average, and high in terms of the accumulation. And then we seeded everything at the same rate. So what do we see in terms of variety response? Really what I was looking at here is, did we see any interactions between variety and sulfur? At all the locations we saw an effect of variety, which is pretty well expected that the varieties are going to differ because we know there's differences in their yield potential. So we look at it in terms of sulfur, one of the sites. Overall, we had a response, but only one of the sites really is where that response came from. The Staples site, which we would expect a response just based on past history. We saw the same thing with grain protein concentration, although we did see one interaction at Staples where two of the varieties, particularly the two high-yielding varieties, which would be Faller and RB07, those two, we didn't see really any response to protein across that environment, which was kind of strange because that's the one the growers thought we would see more of a response from because it's high-yielding versus the Glen, which was lower protein, so we really couldn't replicate or see some of those differences. What did we see in terms of rate response? That bottom table on the left shows what we had for rate response. And what we usually predict in terms of a 28 kg per hectare application rate, we're only actually needing about 8.4 for both grain yield and protein. So it didn't take a whole lot of sulfur within the given location where we had a response to get a response within that. So at least looking at that, maybe some changes we need to make with the recommendations right now in terms of the recommended application rate, because I'm assuming we're still getting some contribution from organic matter in that site. We just don't have a lot of carryover potential, and the higher leaching potential really is really necessitates more of a consistent need for those given locations. So in terms of flag leaf tissue, could we replicate some of the things we saw? This is just looking at the relative yield of control without, and I had to calculate this on a basis for each variety. And the issue for that, if I tried to do this just with the actual yields, it'd be in a disaster just because of the differences in yield potential across the sites. And that's one of the things I've been trying to do with a lot of this data is to look at relative yield, look at yield response more than just trying to do average means for fertilized plots when doing tissue, because we can make a lot of errors, particularly in with sulfur where we have luxury uptake in terms of looking at an optimum rate based on an average value. Within this given site, if you look at it, it's pretty ugly in terms of the R-squared, 0.09. There is a relationship which is curvilinear. The majority of the relationship down here is due to that site at Staples. And that actually, if you just included that data alone, that would have been a linear response at that given location. If I had to take a stab at critical levels or a sufficiency range for this, if I look at 95% maximum yield, that was around 2 grams per kilogram. If I look at my upper end of my sufficiency range, it would probably be 3 to 3.5 with that. I haven't really looked at that and see how that compares. One of the issues we've been having with sulfur has been the ICP versus the combustion analysis. And we typically have been using combustion analysis for that. The ICP values have been coming back a little bit lower. So there's some things that we have to kind of look at. Also on that end that I'm really not showing within this given presentation. So in terms of flag leaf concentration, one of the things we do see, again, is luxury uptake. We have it on most of the sites. Even if we didn't see a yield response, we are always getting more sulfur into the flag leaf tissue. So I know the sulfur there is available. One of the things I don't have in this is looking at grain concentration. We are looking at that. We do know that just from some of the past data that at least there's some shifts in the amino acid concentrations with the sulfur as it's being taken up. The issue with that right now is it can have some implications on grain quality and baking quality, but right now our growers aren't really being allowed for, when we start looking at any premiums for those type of factors, it's mainly just based on total protein percentage within the grain itself. And again, consistent across all the locations, the only thing that was interesting was at Staples that we actually weren't seeing much of a varietal difference in the grain S concentrations. If you look at it over here on the right, these are just showing you the rankings of the varieties. Similar to what we saw within some of that survey work is there's some substantial variation within the varieties. Does high yield mean high concentration? Well, if we look at our highest yielding, this Faller and the RB07, looking kind of mid to low concentrations themselves. And that's one of the things we really concluded on that tissue survey is that a lot of, we just looked at the flag leaf tissue, that variation, if we sample everything on the same day, is mainly due to variation maturity at the time of sampling. And it really doesn't have anything to do with the overall yield level at that given location. So some big issues in terms of what we're seeing there, and we really kind of followed up with what we're seeing in terms of the ranking of these varieties and how they responded to sulfur to kind of confirm what we were seeing within that that survey work. In terms of rate, again, 8.4, that's where we saw the max. So we're not seeing an overall large need for sulfur that would necessitate that 28 kgs per hectare application rate that we're suggesting right now for spring wheat production. So for a lot of our growers, if we're looking at more modest rates of sulfur, I mean, they're probably going to be okay in terms of production just with both protein and both yield in the majority of our acreages. So in conclusion on a lot of the study, again, we're not really seeing any direct evidence of any difference in response. If there is anything out there, I think it's going to be maybe, if you look at it in terms of requirement, maybe within a pound or two of each other in terms of the overall requirement. So in the grand scheme of things, for most of our growers, when it comes down to management, it really doesn't matter. There just isn't enough variation in there that we can cut rates back and be more varietal specific on these rates that that would say it's going to make a big difference in the grand scheme of things, saving a lot in terms of application costs. So what I'm recommending to most of the growers right now is to apply based on the potential need for S, because that's really the best thing to do. Don't change your rates. We may, again, see some differences in how protein responds, but again, I think that's very marginal in terms of making recommendations. And that stability data, and while it's interesting looking at it, I think it's just the inherent genetic potential of those varieties. There's really nothing there that would tell us, if we'd use corn or beans as well, I think that would tell us the overall responsiveness of those crops. We just really can't do that to look at the response potential. And then again, luxury uptake, it's there. We know it's there. I mean, there may be some benefits in grain quality, but overall right now, there just isn't enough there for making any economic decisions for our growers. So with that, I think we have a few minutes for questions.
We have 3 minutes for question, comments, and suggestion for Dr. Kaiser.
Yes.
Where do you come down on this controversy over the soil test sulfur analysis?
Okay, so the question I had is, where do we come down on the controversy of soil test analysis for sulfate sulfur? I'm assuming what you're saying. Right now, we're really not recommending the use of a sulfate sulfur test. I mean, a lot of the labs use it. The issue, what I've been seeing in a lot of my responsive and non-responsive sites, there's not a lot of difference, particularly in the medium and fine textured soils. They'll typically be between 3 to 5 milligrams per kilogram of sulfate sulfur, and that's going to be about it. And that's with the monocalcium phosphate. We've looked at a number of other tests, and there hasn't been any of them that have really stuck out. What I've really been looking at for most of our crops has been organic matter, because it seems to really more give a better indication of what the sulfur supply is. So for corn production, typically what we're recommending right now is anything less than 20 grams per kilogram, the top 15 centimeters, is usually a definite yes. I would probably recommend the same thing for spring wheat production. Then with corn and maybe alfalfa, where we have a larger demand or a larger requirement, then we might look at still applying when we're less than about 40. And it just seems to be a better indicator, although we do know there's some instances with residue and a few other things that can affect these. So it's one of the things right now, I thought I had things figured out with some of our recommendations, but we're still working on a couple of areas, particularly some high organic matter areas that are still responding, that are poor drainage, so we're trying to figure out what's going on. Just looking at the sulfur soil test, so there isn't enough there to give me a wide enough difference in there for a responsive and a non-responsive site. The only time I think it will work for a grower is if we have gypsum in the profile, and we have some soils that have that, so that could probably indicate where it's going to be very unlikely if you get a really high level. But for the most part, most of our numbers come back so even that it's really hard to use that to differentiate a critical level. So the question is on malt barley, whether or not we should be adding sulfur in there, and I think it depends on what happens. If your sulfur is promoting yield, usually we know there's an inverse relationship between the two, so there may be an impact. From what I've been seeing, though, there's such a little effect on protein, so it's really going to be dependent on whether or not you're getting a yield response that you're looking at, because the bigger driver on this always protein is nitrogen, just because of its effect on amino acids. What we've seen with sulfur, it'll shift the protein distribution a little bit, but it doesn't really have an overall impact unless we get a situation like that Staples location where there's a severe deficiency with it.
I think you have a question.
My dietary consumption, I understand, is the uptake yield of the plant, right?
Yes, the question was on luxury consumption. Yes, that means
the plant to be benefiting from the luxury consumption at all.
Yeah, luxury, that's what I mean. Luxury uptake essentially is uptake beyond that's needed for yield. So it's taking up extra sulfur, even though it's not required for yield. So we see higher concentrations, even though the yield response or protein response isn't there within that. For sulfur, I don't really see it being too much of a disadvantage. We don't really see too many toxicity problems with it in terms of sulfur for us. It seems like the plant regulates at a certain point and then it kind of stops. What it does do is it shifts some of the proteins. We're looking at it in terms of spring wheat production for the baking quality. There have actually been shown to be some benefits of the sulfur for baking quality, at least on that. But again, our producers haven't seen any benefit for that. So
I think that's all we have. Thank you, Dr. Kaiser, for excellent presentation and interaction.